The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, it's Thursday. Big day on Capitol Hill. There's a really contentious hearing going on that maybe we're pulling you away from. Peter Strzok, you know, he of the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, FBI text messages. That Peter Strzok is sitting for a hearing, a contentious hearing. It's the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees together. And man, did it get ugly right off the start. We'll get to some of that in and what's news in a little while. But, you know, hi, Nicole Sandler here. I've started doing the started off the show, at least this week, with something humorous, trying to, you know, get the show started on an upbeat note. And, you know, I was looking for a funny comedy bit and couldn't find anything today. I did find some clips that weren't quite right for what's news, but they don't quite qualify as funny, haha. Like, there's the clip of Darla Shine, the wife of Mark Shine. Is it Mark Shine? What's his name? Somebody, I forget his first name. The guy who used to be a co-president at Fox, who is now the assistant chief of staff for communications at the White House. Bill Shine, that's his name, Bill Shine. Bill Shine was fired from Fox because he was complicit in all the sexual harassment cases that were going on. Too toxic to get a job anywhere else, but he can get a job as the, deputy chief of staff for communications, I think is his title. Yeah, when you're too toxic for anything else, come work at the Trump White House. Yeah. So Darla Shine is his wife. Now, back in, I don't know when it was, in the 2000s, Darla Shine had a radio show. And now, I've been doing radio for 40 years, almost 40 years. I think next year will be 40 years. I started in college in 1979. God, I'm old. Anyway. And you know, I can't get a job on regular over-the-air radio anymore, but for some reason, Darla Shine had a radio show on 100 radio stations. It was syndicated by the right-wing talk radio network, which is now defunct, but tape emerged from her show. Now, two things I want you to listen for, and tell me how somebody with this voice could get a radio show, and this content. Here's a little bit of what Darla Shine did on her radio show on syndicated to over 100 stations.
I'm the first person to admit I'm sexist. I don't think that girls should play on the boys' high school team. I don't think that the girls should be. I think it's insanity that there are feminists who are stupid enough to fight to go to combat.
Yeah,
are you
absolutely
kidding me? Why would you
are
ever
you kidding
watch?
Me?
Let the men go die on
Let
the front
the men
lines.
Go
Why
die on the front lines?
Line?
Yep.
You have to be an idiot. And why on earth would you fight to go on a submarine ship for months on end? You know, there was just a story with these women who are upset that they're sexually harassed in the military.
God.
What do you think is going to happen?
God. It's like
when
fingernails
you go on a submarine
on a blackboard.
For 12 months with 4,000 horny soldiers. I mean,
wow.
I hate to say it, but it's true.
Oh, my God.
They should not even be allowed. The top military should say,
Okay, enough. It's fingernails on a blackboard. You should not be allowed to talk into a microphone. My goodness. And basically saying women shouldn't be allowed in the military because men are horny. And if they're going to be in the military, they have to plan on being sexually harassed and perhaps assaulted. Yeah. So there's that. You know, it doesn't mean anything. And probably the only reason she got this job on the talk radio network is because her husband worked for Fox. There you go. And again, there's a plethora of right-wing radio stations, I guess, looking for content. Even if the voice is like this, and it sounds like fingernails on a blackboard, and she's talking crazy shit about women shouldn't be allowed in the military. I'm sorry. It hurts my throat. Hurts my ears. So that was kind of funny in a perverse sort of way. Found another story. I was watching Chris Hayes last night. And you know, he does his thing one, thing two. It's usually some offbeat kind of story. What I heard last night blew my mind. We are now, today is September 12th. 2 years and a few days ago, I found out that I had a mass on my lung. Quite by accident. We thought I was having a heart attack. Turns out it wasn't a heart attack, but the x-ray showed a mass on my left lung, which turned out to be lung cancer. So while I was, this time 2 years ago, I was in the middle of a whole ton of tests trying to figure out exactly what it was and how bad it was and what we needed to do for treatment and all that. If you're new to the show and don't know the whole story, if you go to NicoleSandler.com, there's a tab there. It's called Fuck Cancer, and it tells the whole story. I am now, knock on wood laminate, cancer-free after surgery that removed half and a little more of my left lung. We got lucky. The not a heart attack turned out to save my life. But during the time when I was doing all the research and having all the tests, I heard from an old friend of mine from high school, actually, who had been diagnosed with mesothelioma, which is a particularly nasty form of lung cancer, which is attributed to asbestos. So imagine my surprise when I heard this story. I'm going to play it for you. It's not very long. And it's just typical of how Donald Trump does everything wrong. Everything for the wrong reasons. It's all about him and making himself money. And be damned the health consequences or the environmental consequences or consequences that millions of people might face if it's good for him.
Pick any issue, and the chances are Donald Trump will be very weirdly on the wrong side of it.
There you go.
Asbestos is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Yes, that toxic stuff we used to use in buildings, which causes diseases that kill about 15,000 Americans every year. As we've told you before on the show, not only did he say in his book that asbestos was, quote, 100% safe when it's applied, and that the movement to remove asbestos was a conspiracy led by the mob, the man testified in support of the carcinogen before Congress in 2005.
In New York City, we have a lot of asbestos buildings, and there's a whole debate about asbestos. I mean, a lot of people could say that if the World Trade Center had asbestos, it wouldn't have burned down, melted, okay? A lot of people think asbestos, a lot of people in my industry think asbestos is the greatest fireproofing material ever made. And I can tell you that I've seen tests of asbestos versus the new material that's being used, and it's not even it's like a heavyweight champion against a lightweight from high school. But in your great wisdom, you folks have said asbestos is a horrible material, so it has to be removed.
That's our president. That's the guy
him.
That we elected, the man, the president of the United States. And that is why there is now asbestos for sale in Russia with Donald Trump's face on it.
Unreal.
No, seriously. So Donald Trump is what you could call an asbestos truther. For decades, he's been spewing skepticism that the carcinogen, again, responsible for tens of thousands of deaths worldwide every year, banned in at least 60 countries, isn't really all that bad. And now that he's become president, guess what? His EPA has cut back on regulating the stuff.
Of course they have.
Funny how that works. And this, of course, is great news if you are a Russian asbestos company. This one, Uralasbest, which operates a giant asbestos mine in the Ural Mountains,
amazing,
is even celebrating with Trump-branded asbestos. Uralasbest, the best darn asbestos in the Urals. The company posted these photos on Facebook showing pallets of the stuff marked with a big red seal depicting Trump's face and a phrase that translates to approved by Donald Trump, 45th president of the United States. The company, which reportedly counts Russian President Vladimir Putin as an ally, also posted a comment that reads in part, quote, Donald is on our side. Oh, yeah, he sure is.
A lot of people could say that if the World Trade Center had asbestos, it wouldn't have burned down. It wouldn't have melted. Okay.
You know what, Donald Trump? Let's put you in a room lined with asbestos. Let's do that. And then have them take it down while you sit in the room. Mesothelioma, I hear it's just a truly horrific disease. I wish it on you. I do. I wish him a horrible, painful death. I think he deserves it more than anyone I know. And I don't normally wish those kinds of things on people, but Donald Trump is one of those malevolent fools who is he's just a horrible, sickening person who only cares about himself. And well, you know. All right, there I go. There's my nastiness for the day. I have more. But you know what? Let's get to what's news, because there's a lot of stuff to cover today. We'll cover a little bit of a lot of stuff. Okay? And then Howie Klein's here today.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Well, the big ticket item is happening on Capitol Hill today. FBI agent Peter Strzok, he was the lead agent on FBI probes into Hillary Clinton and the Trump campaign, and he was ousted after texts he sent to a colleague and lover, I guess, critical of Trump were uncovered. So he's in the hot seat on Capitol Hill today as he testifies before a joint hearing of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees. After a particularly testy line of questioning from Republican Trey Gowdy, he's a little twerp. You know, he looks like Malfoy from the Harry Potter movies, first of all. And he's one of those people who's retiring, but boy, he's getting his digs in before he goes. Anyway, after this particularly testy, nasty line of questioning where he wouldn't let Strzok answer any of the questions. Strzok finally was one of the Democrats said, now, can he answer the questions? And they said, yes. So Peter Strzok decided to respond to Trey Gowdy. Listen closely to this one, because I feel like I should play some patriotic music underneath it. But I don't want to take away from what he's saying.
Sure, I think it's important when you look at those texts that you understand the context in which they were made and the things that were going on across America. In terms of the text that we will stop it, you need to understand that that was written late at night, off the cuff, and it was in response to a series of events that included then-candidate Trump insulting the immigrant family of a fallen war hero. And my presumption, based on that horrible, disgusting behavior, that the American population would not elect somebody demonstrating that behavior to be president of the United States. It was in no way, unequivocally, any suggestion that me, the FBI, would take any action whatsoever to improperly impact the electoral process for any candidate. So I take great offense and I take great disagreement to your assertion of what that was or wasn't. As to the 100 million to one, that was clearly a statement made in jest and using hyperbole. I, of course, recognize that millions of Americans were likely to vote for candidate Trump. I acknowledge that is absolutely their right. That is what makes our democracy such a vibrant process that it is. But to suggest somehow that we can parse down the words of shorthand textual conversations like there's some contract for a car is simply not consistent with my or most people's use of text messaging. I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, at no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took. Furthermore, this isn't just me sitting here telling you. You don't have to take my word for it. At every step, at every investigative decision, there are multiple layers of people above me, the assistant director, executive assistant director, deputy director, and director of the FBI, and multiple layers of people below me, section chiefs, supervisors, unit chiefs, case agents, and analysts, all of whom were involved in all of these decisions. They would not tolerate any improper behavior in me any more than I would tolerate it in them. That is who we are as the FBI. And the suggestion that I, in some dark chamber somewhere in the FBI, would somehow cast aside all of these procedures, all of these safeguards, and somehow be able to do this is astounding to me. It simply couldn't happen. And the proposition that that is going on, that it might occur anywhere in the FBI, deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
There's applause in the gallery. Yes, and it deserves more. Good for him. When he was allowed to answer, when there wasn't infighting going on amongst the congressmen in the two committees, Strzok was pretty damn impressive. So the hearing's continuing now, the afternoon session. Lisa Page, the other FBI agent with whom Strzok was texting, will testify before a closed hearing tomorrow. And you know, if the Democrats have control of the House, they get to run the hearings. Just saying. Vote. November 6th is Election Day. All right. Now we move on to the NATO summit. Yeah. And more embarrassment for this nation. As the NATO summit was wrapping up this morning in Brussels, Donald Trump caused a bit of a panic. He demanded NATO members immediately increase their defense spending to 2% of GDP and then called for the target to be doubled to 4% by 2024. German news reported that Trump threatened that if all member countries didn't immediately increase their defense spending commitments, he would do his own thing. Yeah, he did. The NATO officials called an emergency session to deal with these perceived threats. The guy is dangerous. Now, before departing Brussels for the UK, Trump then went before the press. Yes, he held another one of those pressers, this one starting a little bit after 6 o'clock this morning, Eastern time, when he was asked about his commitment to NATO.
Maybe I'm being dense here, but could you just clarify, are you still threatening to potentially pull the United States out of NATO for any reason? And do you believe you can do that without Congress's explicit support and approval?
I think I probably can, but that's unnecessary. And the people have stepped up today like they've never stepped up before. And remember the word, $33 billion more they're paying. And you'll hear that from the Secretary General in a little while. He thanked me, actually. He actually thanked me. And everybody in the room thanked me. There's a great collegial spirit in that room.
Oh, yes.
That I don't think they've had in many years. They're very strong. So, very, very unified, very strong, no problem, right?
Very unified, very strong. Real collegial feeling after he dissed our closest allies. A reporter from Croatia asked if Trump would change his tune on NATO in a tweet once he got on Air Force One.
We understand your message, but some people ask themselves, will you be tweeting differently once you board the Air Force One? Thank you.
No, that's other people that do that. I don't. I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius. Go ahead.
What is wrong with this man? Again, he says, I'm a very stable genius. What the fuck does that even mean? Sorry. Calming breath. Breathe in, breathe out. Okay. Well, one thing that happened, I told you the presser started shortly after 6 o'clock Eastern this morning. On MSNBC, Joe Scarborough decided to fact check some of his lies. And it was chock full of lies, but he was doing it in real time. Trump would be speaking, and they'd actually just talk over him. Here's an example. And I promise this is... I won't play much more of Trump, but he said such ridiculously insane things that you've got to be aware of what he's saying, like this.
You have said previously you wanted the countries to step up their spending to 2%. Yesterday, the suggestion might be 4% or perhaps 2% at a much quicker timetable. Yeah. Can you clarify what did they commit to doing? Yeah. Is that satisfactory to you?
So what they're doing is spending at a much faster clip. They're going up to the 2% level. Now, you have to understand, some of them have parliaments. They have their own congresses. They have a lot of things they have to go through.
They have a lot
of
things.
So, you know, they're here as a prime minister, as a president, and they can't necessarily go in and say, this is what we're going to
do.
You
hear that,
Trump? But they're
going
back for approvals. Some are at 2%. Others have agreed definitely to go to 2%. And some are going back to get the approval, and which they will get. To go to 2%. After we're at 2%, we'll start talking about going higher. But I said ultimately we should be in years in advance. We should be at 4%. I think 4% is the right
number. All the countries, just one more clarification from what the president is saying, which is actually not connected to reality. All of the countries have committed to 2%. Bob Gates went over for Barack Obama several years ago. Since then, the spending has increased, and we're going to be showing you charts to show that actually European defense spending has increased at a faster rate than U.S. defense spending since 2011. Now back to the president.
But right now we're getting people up to 2%, and that'll take place over a fairly short period of time, a short number of years.
That's really how you should listen to any kind of Trump speech or presser, is having someone fact check him in real time, just turn down the volume, correct what, you know, the facts, and then let him keep going. The entire presser was somewhat surreal, chock full of lies and otherwise ridiculous statements, like this answer to a reporter from Tunisia who asked about what's going on in northern Africa right now.
We want to solve problems. We're looking for peace. Africa right now has got problems like few people would even understand. They have things going on there that nobody could believe in this room.
Nobody could believe
it. If you saw some of the things that I see through intelligence, what's going on in Africa, it is so sad.
Oh, yeah.
And so vicious and violent. And we want peace. We want peace for Africa. We want peace all over the world. That's my number one goal, peace all over the world.
Sure it is.
And we're building up a tremendous military because
what?
I really believe through
you want peace?
Strength you get peace. But we're going to have a military like we've never had.
We'll have a military like we never had before because we want peace. Yeah. Oh, my God. There was a lot more. I won't keep assaulting your eardrums with that. Former Secretary of State John Kerry released a blistering statement lambasting Trump's disgraceful and destructive behavior that he said flies in the face of the actual interests of the United States of America. Quote, "The president set America back this morning. He is steadily destroying our reputation in the world. He is undermining our interests. He diminishes alliances we built to safeguard an economic and strategic force that has allowed millions of people to live in freedom." And with that, after, of course, he was late to a meeting dealing with Russian aggression at NATO. What a dick the man is. He's just a fucking miserable piece of shit. Anyway, NATO meetings are over. Trump flew to the UK, where he'll attend a gala dinner tonight, hosted by Prime Minister Theresa May. Tomorrow, Trump will again meet with May and will have an audience with the Queen. Now, this weekend, Trump will visit another of his branded properties, this one in Scotland. He'll stay at the Trump Turnberry, a 112-year-old Scottish resort that he bought in 2014.
Don't want to be an American idiot.
Everybody sing.
Don't want a nation under the new media.
Yeah. Trump will be met by loud protests. Both in the form of a giant Trump baby balloon and a repurposed Green Day song, American Idiot, which re-entered the British pop charts after 14 years in honor of the American buffoon or president. A guy named Alistair Campbell, he was former Prime Minister Tony Blair's spokesperson. He explained that, there's not a whole lot of support in Great Britain for Donald Trump.
Nobody can possibly overestimate just how despised he is. I mean, he really is. I know he'll probably think that because of his Scottish heritage and the rest of it. I mean, I don't think I've ever known. And he might think it's unfair because we've had Chinese leaders, we've had Putin, we've had Mugabe, and you haven't had necessarily the level of protest. But I think people feel that America is a special country, and therefore the leadership in America should be something that British people can look up to and respect. And I'm afraid that there is very, very little respect for him.
I'm afraid there's very little respect for him. That's okay, Mr. Campbell. There's very little respect for him over here, too. Back at home yesterday, the Senate voted 51-48 to confirm a man named Brian Benkowski as an assistant attorney general to head up the criminal division at the Justice Department. This is potentially catastrophic.
The Senate confirmed Donald Trump's highly controversial nominee to lead the Department of Justice's criminal division. That is a big job. Brian Benchkowski will oversee 600 prosecutors. It's a position that was formerly held by the FBI director, Christopher Wray, also by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. So what are the concerns with the president's pick? First of all, there are questions about his experience, or better said, his lack of it. Questions the Democratic Senator Dick Durbin laid out yesterday.
Wait a minute. You are being chosen to head up the criminal division of the Department of Justice, and you have no experience. You have never prosecuted a case. Never. Never once been in a federal courtroom. Not one time.
Never once.
That's a fact.
Wow.
Then there are questions about Benchkowski's resume, specifically his work for a Russian bank that thrives under the Putin government. Here's what Senator Dianne Feinstein had to say. Special Counsel Mueller's investigation has resulted in 23 indictments, 5 guilty pleas, and 1 prison sentence in only 1 year, confirming Benchkowski puts that investigation in jeopardy. And here's why. Benchkowski refuses to recuse himself from the Russia investigation, she writes, despite having worked for a Russian bank under investigation for ties to Trump. He also pushed for Comey's firing to AG Sessions while serving on the Trump transition team. Those are clear conflicts of interest.
Yes, they are. And this is particularly dangerous because now he's next in line, I believe, after Rosenstein. If they, you know, succeed in firing Rosenstein, this is the guy who will be in charge of the whole thing. By the way, if you're wondering who the Democrat was who voted with them, that would be with the Republicans on his confirmation. That would be Joe Manchin. Okay. Now, you know, Tuesday was the deadline that the Trump administration was supposed to reunite children under 5 who were separated from their parents who crossed the southern U.S. border illegally. Well, almost half of them will not be reunited with their families, the Trump administration has said. The government was ordered by a federal judge to reunite 103 children by Tuesday, 2 days ago. Today, the government said it reunited 57 children and determined that the other 46 are ineligible for reunification. The reasons given range from violent criminal histories to findings that the adults were not parents. Several adults, and here's the key part, have been deported or are in criminal custody. The other kids, I believe ages 5 to 17, I think the deadline for them to be reunited is like the 26th. Stay tuned. More evidence that North Korea is playing Donald Trump for the fool that he is. Bloomberg is reporting that North Korean representatives left U.S. officials waiting at the inter-Korean border today when they didn't attend a planned meeting to discuss the return of the remains of American soldiers. You know, the ones that Donald Trump said were already on their way back. Yeah, he lied about that, too. This meeting was supposed to be the first that followed Mike Pompeo's ill-fated North Korea visit from last week, after which tensions re-escalated and North Korea decried the U.S.'s unilateral and gangster-like demand for denuclearization. Bloomberg adds that the failure to secure at least some of the remains, an estimated 200 sets from nearly 70 years ago, would be a major failure for Pompeo, given that they were perhaps the most tangible outcome from his trip. The meeting has now been rescheduled for July 15th, which is Sunday. Good luck to us. Oh, by the way, so today, Trump touted a letter he got from Kim Jong-un, which said nothing, nothing at all. And in, I guess, better late than never news, the federal government has reopened its investigation into the lynching of Emmett Till, the black teenager whose brutal murder in Mississippi shocked the world in 1955. The Justice Department told Congress in a report in March it's reinvestigating Till's slaying after receiving, quote, new information. The case was closed in 2007 with authorities saying the suspects were dead. The report, though, sent annually to lawmakers under a law that bears Till's name, does not indicate what the new information might be, but it was issued in late March following the publication last year of The Blood of Emmett Till, a book that says a key figure in the case acknowledged lying about events preceding the slaying of the 14-year-old from Chicago. The book quotes a white woman, Carolyn Donham, as acknowledging during a 2008 interview that she lied when she testified that Till grabbed her, whistled, and made sexual advances at a store. whole thing was based on a lie. It's shameful. So, again, I guess better late than never. All right, we'll take a very quick break. Come back on the other side with Howie Klein. Get those Dirty Debbies ready and pull out the sweet and low. We'll be right back.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
And Howie Klein, of course, of the Blue America PAC, who finds great progressive candidates that we can all really get behind and be enthusiastic about and come out in great numbers to vote for in the primaries and hopefully get to vote for them in the general election, too. Hi, Howie Klein.
Bonjour. How are you?
I'm doing fine today. How are you?
Good. I'm, you know... doing well. I saw a really, really bad movie last night, but I'm recovering.
What movie?
Generation Wealth. It was made by the same woman, which is why I went to see it, who made a story that you've probably seen, a movie that you probably went to see or watched on YouTube or something called The Queen of Versailles. Do you recall that one?
No, didn't see it.
Well, the reason I assumed that you had seen it is because it takes place in Florida, so I figured, well...
Oh, about the mansion, the people that built the huge mansion. I know the movie you're talking about, yes.
Well, okay. The same woman who made that film, which was pretty good, I thought, made this film. So a friend of mine is a film critic. He invites me to movies every week. Every week I tell him no because since I got the stem cell replacements, mm-hmm. my doctor said avoid movie theaters.
Oh,
But this looked like a good movie, and my doctor has already said, you know, no problem, do whatever you want. But I haven't been to a movie in a couple of years, so I figured I'll go see this documentary. I thought it might not be long. I didn't realize it was like 2 hours, which is should have been chopped in half, and still wouldn't have been any good. So we went to see it in a small screening room, and it really sucked. It was really kind of like a long ad for her book. She has a photo book coming out. I couldn't stand her, and there was every character was more horrible than the next. The only character I liked, because she loved her son so much that she really did a great job on him. So he's a kid, but he was like the most sympathetic character in the whole movie. You know, it's a documentary, so he's playing himself. But, you know, she shot him really, really well. You could see a mother's hand in the way she shot her son. Uh-huh. And he's a bright kid. He's, like, smarter than anyone else in the film. And I was just writing about it, by the way, and I said if she would have wanted to save this terrible movie, she should have had him as the narrator. But what was wrong, you know, I kind of reading the couple of lines that made me want to go see it, is I got the idea, oh, I'll be able to write about this. Because it's going to be kind of political, but it wasn't. I'm writing about it because it's so horrible instead. It reminded me, I don't know if you've seen this, we probably haven't talked about it, Jamie Johnson's movies, the two movies he made, one called The 1% and the other one called, what was the other one? I can't remember it. But they were both similar movies. So Jamie Johnson was is the heir, or I should say one of the heirs, to the Johnson & Johnson fortune.
Right.
So he's really, really rich, and he got access to, you know, all the friends he knew from his social circles and prep schools and things like that. And after he made the movies, none of them wanted to talk to him again, and you could imagine why, because he asked them all these leading questions, and they all made fools of themselves, as you know, by being off guard, thinking, well, Jamie would never screw us over. So they were quite truthful about what pieces of shit they are, and how spoiled they are, and how entitled they are. So that movie, his two movies were just wonderful. And if you go on YouTube and type in Jamie Johnson, you'll find his films. They're so good. This wasn't. This Generation Wealth wasn't so good. So I bet you didn't expect that from me, and I didn't expect to say it, but it just came blurting out for no reason at all.
It's good to know. You warned us against it. Now, there's nothing worse than spending a couple hours, you know, wasting time through a bad movie, because you can't get that time back again. But I guess there are worse things, like, you know, listening to a Donald Trump press conference at 6 o'clock in the morning from Brussels. His whole thing at NATO was just unbelievable. Did you hear any of that press conference? I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning out there.
No, I didn't hear it, although I've read about it since. I might say that as if this movie wasn't bad enough that I was just talking about, she gratuitously has a whole bunch of scenes with Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, that even made it worse.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, this whole NATO catastrophe is really terrible. And you know, I was writing about it this morning and thinking about it in terms of he can get away with this stuff because he's got all these enablers. So either, you know, Congress enables him. But one of the main ways they do that is by confirming all his nominations. I mean, if they stopped confirming his nominations, he couldn't do these things on his own. So he's got a Congress that is just supine in front of him and, you know, just going along as rubber stamps with everything he wants to do. So in reality, these people they're almost as blamable as he is. I mean, when the Nuremberg trials came up, the Allies didn't have Adolf Hitler to put on trial, but they had all of these people who enabled Hitler. And they, you know, the idea was that Hitler couldn't have done it alone, and we're going to punish these people. And I hope to God that one day Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and the whole bunch of them are on trial. I doubt that'll ever happen, but I'd love it if it was.
If we're going to do that, we also need to go back and get the Bush administration to The Hague as well. We got a lot of war criminals still walking around who seem not quite as bad by comparison these days, oddly enough.
That's right. I could forget about them just thinking about how horrible this whole Trump experience is. And, you know, I think I've talked with you about this before, but as much as I did hate the Bush people and Bush and obviously Cheney, the worst of the whole lot, but I really did have a lot of animus towards all of these people. Mm-hmm. But I never really thought that any of them were. I always thought that they were patriots. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to say it, but to me, even though I disagreed with them, it was within the realm of being a patriot. They were patriots. Trump is not a patriot in any way, shape, or form. That's why he really needs to be tried more than they do. And I'm not thinking about sending anyone to The Hague. He needs to be tried right here in this country,
maybe in
New York or Los Angeles. But he is not a patriot. He's against everything that America stands for. And it's not just a matter of disagreeing with him on some specific things. He is a traitor in every sense of the word. I never really thought, I mean, I thought that Bush was doing some bad things, but I never really in my heart of hearts thought of him as a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is.
Yeah.
You know, I feel certain that he's going to, you know, eventually that we'll find out the details of the fact that he is a Russian operative and has been for many, many years. But if he's not, any piece of him that's not in it for Russia is in it for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all he's ever been, is someone trying to amass a fortune. I mean, then you say, well, he's very, very rich. He doesn't need that. Well, you know, I know lots and lots of very rich people. And the richer you get, the more you want.
Right.
So it doesn't work that way. People think, well, if you have enough money, you're not, you don't need, you're not going to be motivated by that. And Trump tried to pass that off as truth during the campaign. He used to say that, you know, I'll never be stealing because I'm so rich, and I don't need to take money from these wealthy super PACs, which he did anyway, because I've got so much money. You know, that's all bullshit. Literally, I mean, I don't want to identify who I'm talking about here, and I hope I'm not, but I worked for a guy at one time who was, you know, very, very rich. Not a billionaire, but, you know, tens of millions of dollars easily. And we were in a taxi, and he was getting out of the taxi, and he dropped a coin. Now, I think it was a dime. He has said in the subsequently that it was a quarter.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was a dime. And he literally, quite literally, fought a bum who tried to pick up the dime or
a
quarter.
Oh, my God.
And, yes, he was on the ground fighting with this guy. And this was a, you know, not a young man. I mean, neither the bum nor my old boss. But they were fighting over a dime in the street on the ground, and unbelievable. But that's what rich people are like. They are more, you know,
they're money hoarders.
Who's the most charitable people in the world? Poor people are the most charitable people in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
I spent two years. Driving through Asia. We've talked about that plenty of times. And it was always poor people, poor Muslims, who always took me in, always fed me. I had nothing. I literally, you know, I was driving. I had a nice car, but that's all I had. I didn't have any money at all.
Wow.
Sometimes. Other times I sold some dope and I got some money. But most of the time I had no money. But I never didn't have a place to stay. I never didn't have food. I always had hospitality and wonderful people. I mean, I was traveling with a bunch of people. I would often, mostly, sleep in my van. I had a bed in it, and my friends would sleep in their houses. And the mother of the house one time in this little village in Turkey called Kitakali didn't like the idea that I was sleeping in the van, and she felt it was too cold out. So she sent one of her children to keep me warm.
Oh, my God.
Van, which I mean, it's like, could you imagine like someone in America doing something like that for a stranger?
No, never.
Offering, I mean, every time these were poor people. Every time we'd walk out of the house, when we'd walk back in again, there would be food.
Wow.
And these aren't people who have lots and lots of food.
Yeah, we don't have those qualities here, no.
No, certainly not in the big cities. I'm looking at a tree out of my window right now, and I'm seeing like all this fruit on it. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I could always eat that. And I'm like drooling looking at it right now. And I mean, poor people have that. They could pick food off the trees.
You know, speaking of poor people, I'm trying to make a segue that doesn't really work.
I'm not you doing segues today. I'm just like talking like anything that pops in my head.
All right. Well, let's go. So Trump left Brussels, where NATO was, to go to England. I got to ask you about American Idiot, which because Howie Klein, for those who don't know, used to be the president of Reprise Records. Green Day was one of your bands.
And American Idiot. It was one of my records.
Uh-huh. And now here we are 14 years or so later. It's back on the charts in England because some people, they had a campaign like to get people to download it and buy the song and I guess request it on radio in honor of Dump visiting. So American Idiot is, I guess, blaring everywhere in Great Britain to mark Donald Trump's arrival.
Well, funny enough, Billy Joe wrote the song with George W. Bush in mind, and the English people find it very appropriate, obviously, all those years later for Donald Trump. And the last I looked, it was number one at Amazon. The campaign was to make it number one at Spotify, number one on iTunes, number one on every service. And I don't know if they've gotten there yet. I haven't looked, but the last time I looked, it was number one on Amazon, which seems to indicate to me it's probably going to be number one everywhere. I believe Bush is in Scotland already. Is that right? I've been watching specifically.
No, he's actually today he's in outside of London. They're having a big dinner, a big fancy gala dinner tonight. Tomorrow, he meets with.
Although happily enough, it's not at Buckingham Palace.
No.
So the only way for it to be a state banquet would be at Buckingham Palace, but this one is I don't want to say a minor palace, but it's not a grand palace, and I don't know that Trump realizes that he's being dissed.
Well, also, he doesn't want to be in London because that's where all the big major protests are, although there are protests all over the place. So tomorrow he has an audience with the Queen and another meeting with Theresa May. And then he goes to Scotland to spend the weekend at his golf resort there.
Two golf resorts where they have some welcoming events for him by the local people who hate him.
Okay.
I mean, if anything, the Scots hate him more than the English do.
Good. I hope he gets the welcome he deserves over there.
Yes. And I hope he saw the giant balloon of him as an angry baby that's flying over Parliament.
Yes, I hope so, too. I hope, they raised a lot of money. They raised like double the amount of money they wanted to get the thing built and to get it out and around. Donald Trump, not very liked over there. And then, of course, after his 4 days in the UK, then he goes to meet with Putin, which it blows my mind that he's going to meet with him with only translators, no aides, no other representative of the government. How is that even possible?
Anything is possible. He can literally do anything he wants. I mean anything, because of the Republican Congress. He knows that they will just roll over for him. So there's nothing that he can't do. Literally nothing. It's scary.
It's scary.
And as he realizes it more and more, he's going to become more and more aggressive about what he can do. It's just horrifying. I mean, I wish November was here. I never really wish for time to go faster. We have so little of it on this earth. That I never pray for something to come faster. This is the first thing I'm ever in my life praying to get rid of the months in between. I mean, the only way to stop him is to win in November. And if the Democrats don't win in November, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's frightening to think about it.
It really is. And the Democrats doing what the Democrats usually do, they're screwing things up. Did you hear about what Joe Crowley is doing with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez?
He says he's not.
He says he's not? Well, she tweeted out. Joe Crowley stated on live TV that he would absolutely support my candidacy. Instead, he stood me up for all three scheduled concession calls. Now he's mounting a third party challenge against me in the Democratic Party and against the will of the New York Working Families Party. Apparently, he won on the Working Families line in New York. They have a whole bunch of different parties and he won, and he was asked to give it up, and he said he won't.
Well, the Working Families Party doesn't like him, and they claim that they have excuses for why they had given him the nomination to even run. They had endorsed him. They made a mistake. They know they made a mistake, but he tweeted right after she did that he's not running. He wants to talk to her in person. He doesn't want to have this fight on Twitter, and that basically her staffers called his staffers. She claims that he didn't come see her. He claims that her staffers didn't ever get back to his staffers.
Mm.
So, but he's definitely not running. It's over. He's supporting her. I think she might know this too, because she's sending her staffers around the country to work on different races. So three of them are down or about to leave for Delaware.
Wow.
To work against Tom Carper, one of the most conservative Democrats in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
And she has what's her name? Carrie. I can't remember what the woman's name is. Carrie Evelyn something is running for the U.S. Senate down in Delaware, and Ocasio has three of her top staffers going down there to help her. And I know there are several campaigns that have the same thing happening. A friend of mine who's in Honolulu, Kaniella Ng,
mm-hmm.
is Congress in Honolulu, and another top staffer of Ocasio is arriving, I don't know, yesterday or today or tomorrow to help him.
Great.
So I think if she really felt she was in any kind of actual danger, she wouldn't be sending her staff all over the country. There's a guy going to Kansas. There are different people going to different places to help the candidates who she's endorsed.
That's great. Well, hopefully spread some of her energy, because we do need more like her. This is what we talk about. There are no primaries in July, right? The next ones are in August.
That's right.
So now's the time, you know.
Ember, this is only August. I mean, in fact, I just mentioned the Delaware situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think that this week is the last day of filing for that primary. And then the primary is in September.
Wow. And then November is coming up quick. And again, one thing I keep trying to explain is people need to keep checking on their voter registrations, because the dirty tricks the Republicans play, they try to get the voter rolls purged. So you need to check and make sure that your registration is still in good standing. And you can do that just by going to your county supervisor of election website and checking on it. But it's worth doing, because a lot of people show up on election day and say, well, I vote every year, every election, and then find their names have been purged from the list.
It does happen.
Yep.
Especially if you're African-American.
Yes.
Or Hispanic.
That is true. Talk to Greg Palast about that quite frequently. So, Howie Klein, there's an op-ed in the LA Times today. Democrats still haven't figured out that legal weed is a winning issue, by Tom Angel. Did the Democrats take advantage of any trends like this to try to get young people to come out? I mean, I'm sure marijuana is on the ballot in a lot of states in November.
It is. I think it's on the ballot, and it's not completely finished yet, but I think it's on the ballot likely in 7 or 8 states. Mm. So when you say the Democrats, so the Democratic leadership is geriatric,
uh-huh.
And of course they don't figure it out, because they're still living in a world where marijuana is the same as heroin.
Right.
So, you know, you're not going to get people like Nancy Pelosi or Steny Hoyer to embrace this kind of thing. However, Democratic candidates all over the country are totally taking advantage of it. They're running ads about it. They are specifically making it part of their platforms. In fact, what you experienced this in Florida already, where they had a referendum which passed overwhelmingly. I think
mm-hmm.
that the Republicans, thinking they could defeat it, which they had done one time, it had to have a two-thirds vote.
Yes.
And they were thinking, well, there'll never be a two-thirds vote. But it passed by the two-thirds the second time around. And then since then, the Republicans have been doing what they can to prevent it from being implemented.
Yep, that's so exactly right.
The same thing just happened in Oklahoma. The Republicans there, seeing what happened in Florida, were so nervous about the question. I think it was called Question 722. They were so nervous about that going on the ballot, because what would happen would be that independents and Democrats would come out in greater numbers, and they thought it would hurt the Republican candidates. So what they did is they put it on the ballot during the primary, and it won. And it won, you know, it wasn't by 1 or 2 points. It won very handily. And now when it comes to, same thing, it comes to implementation time, these conservatives are doing everything they can to screw it over. So in other words, if you want to sell this stuff, you can't sell anything smokable. If you want to sell this stuff, you have to have hire a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
A licensed pharmacist needs to be on the premises. And they're trying to get as few premises licensed as possible. So they're doing whatever they can to go against the will of the people. That's how they're doing this kind of thing. So, I hope the people are going to realize that this is what you can expect when you elect conservatives.
Yeah, but, Democrats need to get with it. I mean, Obama screwed up here, because he should have had the classification changed from a Schedule 1 narcotic to get it off that schedule so that research can be done on it. I mean, he really screwed up.
Right. Well, they did change the research thing, so that we're good with that now. But Obama didn't do it, but Congress did. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm wrong about that. I was thinking about I was thinking about gun research, not marijuana research. Sorry, my bad.
No, if it's a Schedule One.
Obama did screw up.
Yeah.
But remember, who votes? Overwhelmingly, it's not young people who vote, although they are this cycle, thank God. But almost always, it's the old people that vote. Mm-hmm. And the old people are the ones, when you look at the polling, the only group of people who are opposed to legalization are the elderly. And again, just like Pelosi and Hoyer, they see it as some kind of, you know, dark narcotic that's going to, you know, ruin everybody's life and ruin the country. They don't see it the way younger people see it. And they're the ones who vote in the greatest numbers by far. So that's why Democrats are a little bit afraid to, to take a strong stand, especially old Democrats.
Yeah.
And they have, even though Obama himself might feel, you know, that that's the way to go, legalization, he wasn't operating just as a solo operator, and he gave in to advice from, you know, the old people around him.
Yeah.
And that's why we're in trouble with that now. But, you know, there are going to be these referendum all over the country, and, you know, certainly, you know, sometimes people don't win on the first time around. Like Ohio, mm-hmm. it lost, and they're trying to put it on the ballot again. And that, and like just in Florida, the first time it was on the ballot,
yep.
it lost.
Yep.
Second time it won.
Yeah, it did. And so, as you said, we're still fighting it. I mean, it's next to impossible to get a card. In fact, I have this thing with my legs. I have restless leg syndrome, and marijuana is actually good for it. And I went to see a new neurologist last week, and she even asked me, "Have you tried medical marijuana?" And I said, "Yeah." And it's hit and miss. Sometimes it works, and other times it doesn't. She said it's probably the THC content in it. Higher THC probably works better on it. And I'm like, "Well, can you give me a card?" She said, "Nope." Because the federal government will crack down on us. There are certain doctors you can go to get it, but they charge a fortune. And she said, someone like her, she's just asking for trouble if she's, you know, with this administration. She's afraid to take the chance.
Well, when I started my little foray at City of Hope, mm-hmm. when I just in the beginning, they told me, well, you know, even though it was legal, they said it's the policy of the hospital not to take the chances on the doctors there prescribing it. But now that's all changed. I mean, now you don't even have to bring it up to them. The doctors will bring it up to you.
Wow.
And prescribe it for you.
And out there, you don't even need a prescription anymore because it's legal for recreational use now.
Yes, that's exactly true.
And I'm still in the dark ages here in Florida. We're still
well.
Waiting.
I mean, yeah, it's worse in other places where they have nothing going.
That's right.
Yet.
Yep. It'll be a few more years. I do know somebody who's actually she's been on the show before. Deborah Newell Tornello. Her husband, you know, they run a nursery or organic food nursery, and they got one of the licenses here in Florida to grow. But boy, they had to jump through hoops, and they're still doing the growing, though they haven't. I don't think they've started selling. I don't think they've opened any dispensaries yet. And that's the other thing. All these cities are now saying, "Well, we're not allowing any dispensaries within our city limits." I mean, there are just so many barricades to it. But it'll all come around eventually. But again, it is a good voting issue for Democrats to get young people out to the polls.
Yes, it will. It will do that. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Cities tend to be run by Democrats. How is it that they're not embracing the whole idea of, why are they opposing medical marijuana dispensaries? What's that about?
You got me. I don't know. I guess I need to go to a city council meeting or something. Because when I know the city that I live in, Coral Springs, they don't want any within, Coral Springs confines. And the neighboring cities, too. I'm sure some will have them, but there are none right around here.
Well, I mean, I would think that, like, in places like Miami, in Miami Beach, you're going to have it.
I would think so, but I haven't ventured down there recently. But I'm sure they're starting to pop up. Yeah, I know there are some dispensaries licensed and open. So I'll have to go and search. Go in search of a pot doctor and a dispensary. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America Pack. Howie, it's always great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Good to talk to you. I'm shocked that we went through a half hour already.
We did.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. Tomorrow, Gaius Publius is back with us. He had a column in the San Francisco Chronicle, an op-ed that we will discuss. Important stuff. It's always good to talk with Gaius Publius, too. All right. So we'll see you tomorrow right here on the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.